south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, how about this email that comes from an Expat Insider Seminar alumnus? He came down to the seminar, I think, 5 years ago now, and is living in Guatemala, in and around Lake Atitlan. Considered by people in the know to be the first or second most beautiful lake in the world. For some reason, if you look it up, it always seems to be a battle between Lake Atitlan and Lake Como in Italy. Have you seen either one of them? One of the differences being that in Lake Atitlan, you could get lakefront property starting at around $100,000 and Lake Como starting at around $2 million. Decisions. So anyway, our expat insider alumnus who's living there now writes, Johnny, I found a very interesting and positive secondary effect that happens to us when we get out of Dodge. You may have mentioned this before on your show, but I didn't catch it. You've talked about when you get out of Dodge, how the stress and anxiety levels instantly start to drop. I found that absolutely true, and within 6 months, there was a noticeable drop in my blood pressure and a general overall improvement in my attitude and general health. I lost 15 pounds, too. I think it's the elevation and all the walking around. Over the 4 years I've lived here, I've had a number of visitors down from the States, and they've told me I'm a different person, always in a good way, too, to my face. And I know a lot of it's got to do with the atmosphere, the air, the open street markets with most of the food grown right in the area, the fact that I'm in the Altiplano with no air conditioning or heating, so I've got a tiny energy footprint, and all that makes me feel good and adds to the general feeling of your well-being, not to mention the locals, even the poorest of them, are always smiling. And seem generally happy, so much happier than my family and friends up in the States and the ones that have come down to visit, who still text and email me. And that's the point I want to discuss. You know, when I first got down, my messaging, texting, email, and social media were off the charts, with all the friends and family up north chiming in all the time, wondering how I'm doing, how I'm surviving, have I been kidnapped, robbed, or extorted yet? To my face, they were positive, but on social media, you know, you can say what you want, and they always seem to come off a little edgy. Though they didn't come right out and say that. They would send me little articles and news clips and links to various negative stories about U.S. citizens in Latin America, almost as if they wanted me to report bad news back to them. Though when I left 4 years ago, some of my friends and family were positive or neutral about my anticipated move. They all wanted the best for me, of course, but didn't want me to leave, really. Some of them said they were jealous and meant it, the 10 or 20% who saw exactly which road the U.S. was going down. Though more than half of them gave me a look, rolled the eyes, and said, are you sure you want to do that, Peter? I've heard stories about gringos going down, and some of them don't turn out very well. I heard them too. But then again, Johnny, they don't listen to your show, and they never came down to your seminar. And none of them had been anywhere but vacation spots in Mexico, like Cancun. And only one of my friends had ever been south of Mexico, and that was Costa Rica. Oddly enough, he's the one that said, go for it, Pete. So Johnny, as mentioned, when I left 4 years ago, I was in constant contact with my friends and family. They wanted up-to-the-minute reports on how my adventure was going. Though I could tell they weren't quite listening when I told them how happy I was. Everyone loves gossip and bad news, but I didn't have any. But here's the thing. Over the years, little by little, the messaging and social media contact I've had with those connections up north has slowly faded away, and the disconnect with some of my age-old friends has been almost complete. For example, one of my best friends, Paul, during the first couple of months I left, would email or text me practically every day. And now, 4 years later, I only hear from him every 3 or 4 months when somebody dies or he's planning a trip to a resort like Cancun or something, inquiring if I'd like to meet up with him there. He's one of those Americans who's got no concept of world geography. Thinks everyone who lives in Latin America is within 2 hours' drive of Cancun. My point is, Johnny, in that 4 years I've been down here, I've made a whole new group of friends, gringo and otherwise. I've got a whole new chapter to my book of life. And people who might hear this, if you read this on your show, Johnny, might think it's rather sad or melancholy to disconnect from all those early friends and acquaintances. Mark my words, you will disconnect from them. But is it really that sad? The good news is, in my case anyway, I used to spend a lot of time with people who didn't add value to my life. everyone's got a few energy-sucking friends around them. Complainers, whiners, critics, wet blankets, natural party poopers. I bet you're thinking of one or two in your life right now. I'm sure you know how hard it is to dump or avoid them if they're living nearby, and almost impossible to cut them out of your life if they're family members. You reminded me of that, Johnny, in the show when you were talking about time vampires and energy suckers. I never thought about it too much until you mentioned it. Only now, I realize, getting out of Dodge solved that problem completely for me. It's automatic. It just happens. So if you're kind of a social coward like me, I find it hard to tell people to their faces that they're full of shit, or that I don't feel like hanging or going out with them, because they're boring. Consider this. Cutting those people out of your life just by virtue of getting out of Dodge will make you healthier, psychologically speaking. Then he says, I'm thinking of one particular childhood friend right now. A real negative downer kind of guy, but a childhood friend's a childhood friend, right? I just know when he would phone up or show up at my door, or show up at any party, it just puts a damper on things. But they're friends, even if they're boring ones, and you do have to invite them to your parties. However, just the act of getting out of Dodge solves all those problems for you. I just want to verify, Johnny, that it's so true. Getting out of Dodge and voting with my feet was the best thing I ever did. It even helped me ditch the people that didn't add anything positive to my life. Though, just a word of caution. Try not to add any new negative people or time wasters to your life. There's always that danger, especially when you first arrive in a new country and you don't know anyone. Just be careful not to add a whole new lineup of energy suckers into your new life. Oh, and Johnny, about that gringo advantage. You're so right. Everybody wants to be your friend. The people are so nice here, sometimes you think it's fake, that it's a put-on, but it isn't. It takes a while to figure that out. Though I have to say, early on I was put off a little bit by the fact that everyone seemed almost too friendly. I'd sit in front of my apartment building, on the steps, outside, right in front of the sidewalk, smoking a cigarette. And right off the bat, strange things would happen. I had an apartment in a mixed residential part of Guatemala City known as Zone 4. And with a university close by, there was lots of foot traffic. The area was called Cuatro Grados Norte. In English, that means 4 degrees north. Yeah, Johnny, after 4 years, my Spanish is getting pretty good. By the way, I took German in high school. What a mistake. So I'd be sitting on the stoop, smoking a cigarette, and practically everyone who walked by would say Buenos Dias or Buenos Tardes to me. And I'd respond in kind. Often, to the point sometimes, I'd be saying good morning or good afternoon every 30 seconds to people I'd never even met before. Same thing happens when you're riding in an elevator. When it stops to let a person in, the new passenger will almost always say, Buen dia. And when the door opens and they leave, they say it again. People are exceedingly nice and polite. Come to think of it, elevator politeness. Never knew there was such a thing. What a concept. I can't recall experiencing elevator politeness twice in my life. And I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, where there's supposed to be a thing called Southern hospitality. Sorry to say that's old school and fading fast. Signed, Pete, Expat Insider Seminar alumnus and, soon to be, repeat offender. See you at the February seminar, Johnny. Glad you firmed up the dates. P.S. If you need a driver at the seminar, I'm your man. All right, Peter, thanks for that. And as far as seminar bus drivers, you know, generally at the seminars, we do have previous seminar attendees driving the bus. Sometimes we have two. And often one of those drivers is Captain Mango himself. We'll see how it works out this time and let you know, Pete. Thanks for the offer. But you'll have to take a number. You're on a waiting list. Got a couple other past seminar attendees who want to drive too. Which brings to mind what the schnoz, Jimmy Durante, might have said. Everybody's trying to get into the act. For sure I'm showing my age, huh? Does anyone under 50 remember Jimmy Durante, the schnoz? Anyway, Peter, you're so right. One thing I personally loved about moving to Latin America in the early days, especially, that was before the internet and emails. So the only way to communicate with anyone up in the States was by snail mail, which took about a month. Yeah, it did get through, but it took about a month. The only other way to connect with people up in the States was by landline phone. And it didn't matter what Latin country you were in, it would take 3 or 4 tries to get through, and you get charged for a minute for every false try or disconnect. So if you dialed and it cut out, or dialed and connected for a second, then cut out, you'd still get charged a buck or two for that. Back then, depending on which country and which service you use, it was a buck or two a minute. And in every Latin American city, there'd be little hole-in-the-wall places. And when you walk in, there'd be a little row of phone booths, all landline phones, and boy, were they busy. Of course, most all Latin American families had a landline phone in their house, but they were very careful not to use it for long-distance calls. Just one phone call to Uncle Tulio and my jammy could wipe out the family budget. and everyone in the house knew it. So generally, you wouldn't be making any friends by asking someone you know to use his phone because you'd never know what the bill's going to be at the end of the month. It would really be bad form to leave a humble Latin American family with a shocker of a phone bill. So why am I bringing this up? Well, way back when, in the 1980s and early 90s, gringos and expats living down here had landline phones too. That was all you had to communicate. Sure, cell phones were just starting to come in, but in those days, you even paid for calls received. And they dropped out everywhere, in buildings, elevators, under bridges, underground parking lots. And you'd pay hefty by-the-minute charges too, remember those days? Back then, here in Latin America, cell phones were kind of experimental. And only upscale people and gringo wannabes, you know, people putting on the dog, would buy the things. And many times, they'd never use them. They'd just strap them to their belts and purses. Again, just kind of putting on the dog. In fact, I remember in the 90s and the early 2000s, I'd see long lines of people waiting their turn at outdoor payphones. And everyone under 40 standing in that line had a cell phone strapped to their purse or belt. They were all on pay-as-you-go cell phone plans, and they were all out of money. Like that old Texas saying, all hat and no horse. Meanwhile, back at home, la casa, everyone had landlines. So if your friends and family wanted to call you from up in the States, they'd get through most of the time. But they'd be paying a buck or two a minute as well. So guess what? In the first couple of months I landed here, I'd get a lot of how's it going calls from friends and family up in the States. That's how it went the first month or two until they got the phone bill. And in the following months, man, did those calls from back home dwindle. And when they did come, they were mighty short and sweet. Now, you might think that as kind of a drawback, but in the end, I thought, this has an upside. Kind of forced you into a different mode of communicating and thinking about your connections up north. So all those time wasters and negative people in your life, having a plan B down here will resolve that most satisfactorily and free of guilt, too. Even today, with all the cheap and easy social media connections, once you move down, you'll still get bombarded with calls from your connections up north, but that'll fade fairly fast. What I'm saying is the people you really want to remain connected with up in the States, you'll have to put some extra effort into that to keep it going. Like a certain gringa expat once told me. She says getting a plan B and moving to Latin America is kind of like graduation day from high school or college. All those people you were so connected with standing there on graduation day, they're going to quickly fade out of your life as you start a new chapter in yours. The next time you get to see them again just might be at your 10-year class reunion. Or maybe, like me, you won't even go to any of them. Have you done yours? Though, for me, there might be a reason to go to one. Just to see the jocks and student council members who were so cliquish and full of themselves. I'd like to know which ones peaked in high school and failed later as adults. That happens a lot, you know, especially with people who will tell you that their high school or college years were the best years of their lives. Well, they weren't for me. How about you? I never much liked high school or college, nor grad school or post-grad. But in spite of that, I did well, mostly bolstered by the fact that I was on the Chicago Street Department dead dog crew. You heard me talk about that before on the show. I thought, you know, college is much cleaner and much less disgusting. And that stint on the dead dog crew, though guys always thought it amusing, the ladies weren't impressed. I wonder how many guys have occupation garbage man or sanitary engineer on their Tinder profile. So yes, I went to college. It was the thing to do, you know. Though I really could have screwed up if I had listened to my high school counselor who told me not to go into engineering. Because after the moonshot in 1969 and the end of the Vietnam War, he told me NASA and the Defense Department were laying off tens of thousands of engineers. So the future for engineering was bleak, he said. But I went anyway because of that scholarship. But who knows how far I'd have risen had I majored in drama, psychology, or ethnic or gender studies. Just think, by now I could have been head cashier at Starbucks. As Marlon Brando once said, I could have been a contender. Enough said about that. And now, an email from Mr. G. He says, Johnny, a buddy in Alaska asked me yesterday after listening to your podcast I sent him. He said, hey, Mr. G, that was you Johnny was talking about on his show when he asked you why you hadn't applied for a Latin American residency. Oh, one more thing. Mr. G's an expat living in Mexico Lindo. By the way, Mr. G says he listens to my podcast all the time, but he says, hate to tell you this, Johnny, but my wife never listens to your podcast. Even though she learns a shit ton when I insist, she listens to relevant portions. So then why doesn't she listen to you like I do? Well, in her strict Christian parlance, she considers you, Johnny, arrogant and self-directed. Then he says, welcome to the club, bud. So am I. So don't worry, Johnny, if you read this on your podcast. She won't become inflamed or try to kill me. At least I don't think so, because she won't hear it. Remember, she hates you. All right, me, Johnny here, just gonna throw in my two cents. You know, Mr. G, seems it's the story of my life. Some people just don't like me. People are always trying to rip me a new orifice on the internet. But you do know you're popular and hitting a nerve when people dish you all over the internet and even make up entire fake websites about you. You know, that is a badge of honor in this business. Like Expat Eddie said, Johnny, your 15 minutes of fame is stretched into 15 hours. Bottom line, there are people out there who don't want me to talk about this stuff, but they can't cancel me. Well, I shouldn't say that because people 100 times, 1,000 times more in the limelight than me get canceled all the time. Though that in its own way is a badge of distinction, too. They haven't come for me yet, though. But you listeners out there who are way above average and have brains, you get what's going on here. In fact, I get little notes and texts from listeners all the time saying, Johnny, funny how people try to rip into you on the internet. You really know how to stir up the wokesters. Like this little note I got from listener Patrick a couple days ago. He said, Johnny, I discovered my new pastime. It's reading reviews of your podcast. Wow, do the loons get bent out of shape with you? Just the fact that you're triggering snowflakes and wingnut lefties must mean you're doing it right. I haven't laughed that hard in a while. Keep it up. That just came in from listener Patrick. Yep, I get little notes and messages like that all the time. I'm sure it's the fact that some people think I'm not spouting out their version of the truth, as if the truth comes in different versions, you know? Like Baskin-Robbins, 57 flavors. Wait a minute, that's Heinz ketchup, right? All right, moving on. Who can we pick on now? How about this from the email stack from Mr. B? He's hitting on a topic that we've spent some time on in the last couple shows. He says, Hi, Johnny. Thank you for the recent coverage regarding people who are being frozen out of Mexican tourist visas due to changes in Mexican government visa policies. For the portion of your listeners who are mired in indecision about whether to make such a move, whether Mexico or a move to Latin America due to a fearful husband or wife or afraid of a new life in new lands, my own personal situation might enlighten them a bit enough, I hope, to possibly get off the fence and take some action. So here goes. My wife and I actually came down here south of the border 5 years ago with the express purpose of gaining residency in Guatemala and finding a small coastal community I could ply my marine tradesman skills in. We'd lived on sailboats in the United States, and I brought down a lot of boat gear with the idea we might find another boat to live on here as well. We were one of those couples who can afford the monthly income requirements for some of the Central American countries to get that permanent residency visa, but didn't quite qualify for Mexico or Panama, which have higher monthly income requirements, be it pension, Social Security, or other. Now, whilst on our way, as we drove south of the border, my wife fell in love with the highland weather and culture of the Altiplano region of southern Mexico. She refused to go any farther south, so we never made it to Guatemala. But still, we were in Latin America. It was love at first sight. She was smitten, and as they say, if mama's not happy, nobody's happy. Remember that golden rule, and you won't end up in the doghouse any more than the next guy. So, after seeing this particular part of the Altiplano in southern Mexico, mama wasn't just happy, she was extremely happy. Anyhow, Johnny, some of your fence-sitting listeners might just identify with the resulting conundrum. The question is, does one follow logic, realize the place you are is not going to work out in the longer term? And despite reservations of abandoning love and companionship, do you make that hard decision and do what needs to be done? Or does one muddle along, mired in indecision, and never move ahead due to fear of feeling lonely as the years tick by? For folks still stuck in the rapidly devolving morass that's the USSA these days, I'm thinking, if you're a sane and intelligent person, the mental anguish must be taking its toll. Then Mr. B adds, for those folks in that conundrum, I'd offer one clued-in gringo's counsel. So flip a coin and take action if need be, rather than waste any more time sitting in the house as it tumbles down. Sadly, I didn't take my own advice, and in my case, it was years. But now, finally, it's been solved by none other than the Mexican government, throwing a monkey wrench in our usual pattern of visa renewals every 180 days in border runs to Guatemala. Alas, they're closing that option down. So we're forced to make some kind of move. In my particular situation, it's easily solved by just moving back aboard a sailboat and forgetting about the formal residency process for me and my wife. And after all that visa hubbub, My wife's developed a not-so-secret wish to return to the U.S. and go no further south into Central America. Will that mama's not happy thing come into play again? We'll see. So in the end, it was a lot of wasted time, and perhaps this cautionary tale might spur fearful fence-sitters up north and in Mexico to some kind of action. The truth is, Johnny, up to now, Mexico has been a procrastinator's paradise. But those days are gone. It's decision time. It's either back to the U.S. or head south of the border. And Johnny, for folks wondering if it's safe down here, I can wholeheartedly say I'd much rather live down here than in the U.S. In short, the people are friendly, the price is very affordable, the food wonderful, the government structure entirely manageable and not onerous. Definitely worth getting off the fence for. Even if it finally comes down to a coin toss, rather than years spent agonizing and indecision. In the end, I hope our story might help other folks in the same boat. Time will tell. The only problem is there ain't much of it. And a big shout out and thanks for the ever-developing Johnny Mueller Underground Expat Railroad. It's shaping up to be a very effective get-out-of-dodge plan B for many of the right kind of people. That's it, Johnny. Mr. B signing off. Nos vemos. Well, Mr. B, thanks for that. I get exactly where you're coming from. And now, in the same vein, that vein being getting the hell out of Dodge and getting that plan B going, comes this email from Phil who says, Johnny, please read this and you'll see why I have to get the hell out of Dodge. Scraping the money together right now to come to your seminar. I can't wait. Okay, Phil, we'll read your message. It starts, early here in the States during the lockdowns, I observed countless college kids, you know, 20-somethings, who are all in with the lockdowns and the quarantine, everything that goes in the pandemic. He said, for example, Johnny, some months back, I drove to a craft beer joint, which was also one of my favorite restaurants. And there was a young 20-something at the door with a long dress, gloves, had a mask on, and a face shield. She had something wrapped on her head, looked like a Taliban wife. A millennial for sure, you know, a college hipster type. With assorted rings and piercings in her face. She was young, still a little pimply around the forehead. Oh, and she had one of those sleeve tats on her arm, too. I've often wondered what kind of parents would let their kids do that. Not a good look, especially for the young ladies. Anyway, I walked towards the door without a mask, and this ultimate kind of hipster freewheeling college girl suddenly becomes the compliance officer of the state COVIDiot-Stasi. She blocked the door, said, where's your mask, and shoved a bottle of brown hand sanitizer towards me. She says it's a special, natural, aromatic, cocoa-scented sanitizer. Try it, she said. We're selling it here, too. $14.99 a bottle. And I said, $14.99, huh? So you're making a profit off the pandemic then, right? I can go down to Costco and get hand sanitizer for $5 a bottle, though I never use this stuff. And she scowled behind that face shield and said, that comment was uncalled for, sir. And you, sir, should be home and not outside having fun in these times. So she flipped from being a freewheeling 20-something tattooed hipster with a stud through her nose to being all in a stormtrooper for the religion of the pandemic. The crazy thing is, Jenny, I seem to run into young college-aged pandemic stormtroopers all the time. Same kind of thing happened to me just 2 weeks ago. I must confess, once again, I was out enjoying myself in these terrible times. This time, having a Thanksgiving get-together with my extended family. The usual group of 25 or 30 people. Though two of my nieces, 20-something college-age girls again, were wearing masks around the house. Though they dropped them momentarily during those life-and-death social media conversations they were having every 3 or 4 minutes. So anyway, speaking to one of my masked young nieces, I said, why are you and all your college-age friends so bought into this lockdown agenda? You know, if you get COVID, and we all will, you know the research says you'll have immunity forever. You can ditch the mask forever, too. And we argued a little bit about that. She had no data, and I did. I told her to watch the Joe Rogan-Dr. McCullough interview. It just came out. It'll set the world on its ear. But my point was, how come you're all so bought into this? And here's what she said, and then I started to get it. She said, for people my age, this pandemic is the very first real thing that's ever happened to us. And that stopped me cold. I said, explain, please. And she said, you know, you live your life day by day like everyone else. Then suddenly, this comes, the pandemic, a force of nature. The kind of drama, she said, none of us, nobody my age anyway, has ever seen before. Don't you see? She said, the crisis, these mandates, it's an epic event. Then I started to get it. She'll look back on this when she's old, if she lives that long, like our parents look back on World War II. It was their generational epic event, when everyone pulled their blinds at night for lights out in case the Jap Zeros attacked. Everybody saved rubber, lard, copper, and gladly bought into food rationing. It's what the 60s in Vietnam were to my generation. So for them, the millennials and college students of today, it gives them some sort of sense that their life meant something, part of something huge that comes along once in a generation. Like she said, an epic world event. So now we've got all these good little millennial lockdown compliance officers. The females are called Karens, right? I don't know what they call the guys. It's almost religious, a spiritual thing with some of them. You've got the whole range. So what I'm thinking is we're not going to get out of this. These young adolescents and college-age students, they've found their niche. They're on a mission. For them, it was the perfect storm, too, because living addicted to social media does not produce happiness or fulfillment. Ask any unwoke psychologist if you can find one. Sad to say, but by the time a kid gets to college, there's more than a 50% chance he's been on some kind of psychiatrist-prescribed medication. And just one more comment about all that's crashing and burning around us right now. Just think of it, over 20 months with this COVID stuff, the lockdowns, the quarantines, the social distancing, the craziness, most all of our systems have failed us. Our healthcare system failed us. Religions failed. Our schools failed. Our transportation systems failed. Our financial system and supply chains failed. Restaurants, small businesses put out of business. Our politicians failed. They always do. And really did make everything worse. The truth is, the last two things I can think of where the U.S. government did anything right was the winning of World War II and the moonshot in 1969. And even that, according to Elon Musk and SpaceX, because government did it and not private industry, it cost more than 10 times as much as it should have. So with the pandemic, every sector of life took a huge hit, except Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies. Not only did they survive, but they hit all-time highs. The problem is 50% or more of American people are sheep and they'll believe anything. And Johnny, I just can't live under those conditions anymore. I'm in the final stages of my plan B and should be out. Boots on the ground in Latin America sometime in the new year. Signed, Chet from Vermont. Wow, Chet, good one. Hope to see you at the seminar. Remember, for all the info and sign-up information for my February 2022 Expat Insider Seminar, it starts February 18th. Just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.